What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 130. Today, we're going to be talking about problems with early screening for cancer. And we've had a few podcasts on cancer in the past. We had Keto for Cancer. And last week, we talked about how insulin really promotes cancerous growth. So if that's something that sounds interesting to you, go ahead and check out last week's podcast. But Tom specifically wanted to talk about screening because there's just so many flaws with it. And I think it should be pointed out, right?
Yeah, I didn't really think that there were going to be this many flaws. But once most of this is going to come from the Cancer Code by Dr. Jason Funk. And like he had a really long section on all these flaws. And it really just pointed out kind of the obvious to me. It's like, oh, yeah, of course all this stuff is bad. Like, why would people think this is a good idea? So, yeah, this is definitely something I think more people should be aware of.
Yeah, for sure. I agree. Because, I mean, obviously cancer has affected both of us, and cancer affects millions of people every year.
I mean, hey, and it's not going anywhere. Not anytime soon.
No, it's not, unfortunately.
Yeah. So the main point of this podcast is that early-stage cancer is easy to treat. However, late-stage cancer is a lot more deadly. So the difference between the two is that late stage cancer is cancer that has already metastasized, which means like it's spread throughout the body. So that's a point of doing early screening, is so you can catch the cancer before it spreads, before it hits that late stage. So these are the three main ways that early cancer screening fail. So they lead to overtreatment, and that overtreatment leads to a lot of unnecessary and unwanted side effects. The data that is on the early screening reflects cancer death and not all-cause mortality, which we've talked about a million times, that all-cause mortality is what we really care about, not on how you die. I care more about like that I died early than on what the specific cause was. Because I can give somebody a cyanide pill and be like, hey, this is a cure for cancer. You will 100% not die from cancer if you take a cyanide pill, but you're going to die a lot sooner. So it's not really like the best way to look at things.
Yeah, so that obviously looking at data in that world causes it to be skewed favorably for their argument.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the other problem is that early screening does little to prevent late stage cancers. So we'll get into all of that in the podcast. But I kind of wanted to start off with a little bit of good news on the cancer front, because there has been some victories. I feel like every single podcast we've done on cancer has just been all negative. So I thought we should kind of, you know, celebrate some of the minor victories that we've had.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because they don't come very often.
Yeah, definitely. So by far the biggest victory in the war on cancer has been on the lung cancer front. And that's come from informing people that smoking is bad. I mean, that sounds like really surprising that people needed to be informed that smoking was bad. But hey, like your parents, maybe even your grandparents, they thought that smoking was not only just like safe, but it's beneficial. So yeah, it hasn't been that long that people have known smoking is bad. And then we put in all the taxes, all the regulations, and you can't smoke indoors, you can't smoke on an airplane, you can't smoke in a doctor's office. You know, like you, if you're going to smoke, you have to go to like this outside area that's half a mile away from any other people.
Yeah, I mean, you're treated like a leper nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's because of all this that I have, like, an odd admiration for smokers. Like, I'm not jealous of smokers by any means, but I kind of look at them as, like, MMA fighters or boxers. Like, that's not something I'd want to be one of them. But, I mean, like, hey, people do it because, like, a pack of cigarettes is, like, $10. They're hella expensive. You smell bad after you smoke. Your teeth get yellow. It does all these negative health impacts. And, like, it's even hard to find a spot where you can do it. So, like, if you're still smoking with all those, like, speed bumps in the way, like, that's some real dedication.
Oh, yeah. No, it's true. And honestly, like, I don't talk about it all the time, but working in the hospital, you would think that people would be a little more health conscious, but so many people in the hospital smoke cigarettes. Like, it's just, it's a trip.
Yeah, like, I don't really know, like, what's going on there. I mean, I get that they're highly, highly addictive, but there are lots of things that are highly addictive that aren't anywhere near as widespread. I mean, like, heroin's really addictive, and as far as I know, I don't know anybody addicted to heroin, but I know a bunch of smokers.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so besides lung cancer, another area that we've made some, like, minor victories is with liver cancer, and that's mostly from the hepatitis B vaccine. And we've also had a lot better hepatitis C treatment options. So those have helped out tremendously when it comes to liver cancer. I mean, those victories have kind of been offset by the increase of obesity because liver cancer is one of those obesity-related cancers. But hey, a win is a win. So let's like kind of celebrate it when we get those.
Sure. Yeah, if you want to.
It's like 2 steps forward, 1 step back, or 1.5 steps back. I don't know how that math works out, but it's, hey, we've made a little bit of progress.
A little bit of progress, yeah, okay.
Yeah. But outside of those two victories, there's really not a lot known on how to prevent cancer. I mean, me and you and, like, Thomas Avery, we think we got this stuff figured out, mm-hmm. but mainstream medicine is definitely not on board with us. So as far as they're concerned, there's really no known way to prevent cancer. So since there's really, like, no widely accepted way to prevent it, early detection has been the focus. So, I mean, obviously, like, the logical thing to do is increase screening to detect it before it can metastasize, before it can turn into that late-stage cancer.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. Like, that makes logical sense.
Yeah, it does. It does. Mm-hmm. I mean, by the end of this podcast, I'll probably change your mind. But let's talk about it in some different cancers that it has worked. Because this strategy has worked before. So cervical cancer is like the gold standard when it comes to this line of thinking, and that's due to the Pap smear. So rates have dropped by 79% from 1969 through 2016, and that's due to the Pap smear. I mean, the HPV vaccine also get like that a big boost, but most doctors are crediting to the Pap smear. So hey, that strategy does seem to work. It could be the vaccine. But hey, like, we'll give them credit. So for colorectal cancer, this is the number 3 cancer killer. Screenings have come a long way. And this first option, like, would you actually think about it? It's like, why did we ever do this? So the first way that we were trying to detect colorectal cancer is the rubber glove and bend over technique. And this was widely unpopular and uncomfortable for everybody involved. The patient didn't like it. I'm sure the doctors didn't like it. Like, nobody wanted to do this. And it was also not very effective because I'm not sure how many people are, like, aware of this, but the colon is a lot longer than your doctor's finger.
Yeah, like, not even comparable.
Like, I don't know why we thought this was a good idea. Like, we make fun of, like, leeches and, like, bloodletting as, you know, like, barbaric medical treatments. Like, this seems like a barbaric medical treatment.
For sure. Yeah, definitely uncomfortable.
Yeah. So now we've come a long way. Now we use a stool sample, and if that stool sample tests positive for blood and it detects something else, then a colonoscopy is required. Still an uncomfortable situation, but at least this is not as widely used and is a lot more effective. During a colonoscopy, you can actually visually see the entire colon instead of just kind of feeling around a couple inches and guessing, like, hey, that kind of feels weird. Like, no, you can actually see what's going on. And you can remove the cancerous polyps. So this technique has reduced rates of colorectal cancer by 76 to 90% and deaths by 51%. No unnecessary treatments because they're pre-screened beforehand and there's no unnecessary surgeries.
That's a huge drop.
Yeah, I mean, hey, it's still the number 3 killer, but hey, that's a giant win as far as like the cancer field is concerned. Mm. I mean, other than smoking cigarettes, I think that's like the second biggest victory.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the screening hasn't had the same success with other types of cancers. So the first one we're going to talk about is breast cancer. So breast cancer has no main suspect. It's not as obvious like lung cancer is with smoking cigarettes. And breast cancer is also the number 2 cancer killer in women. So if caught early enough, the five-year survival rate is above 90%. However, once it becomes metastatic, it drops to under 30%. Under 30%, that's a very, very bad outcome. Breast cancer relies on mammography. That's an X-ray. And usually you start screening after the age of 40. So 40 to 49 is normally when most women will get their first mammography done. And breast cancer deaths peaked in 1989 and have steadily decreased since then. However, several studies by the Cochrane Library and the Swiss Medical Board found that mammography did little to nothing to prevent breast cancer deaths. So for women over 50, only 1 in 1,000 was saved by this technique. The other 999 were exposed to radiation for no reason whatsoever. And if you remember from last week's podcast, we talked about that chronic sublethal damage. Radiation is one of those things that's chronic sublethal damage. That's how cancer is transformed and progresses. So yeah, you're exposing 99.9% of women to something that they do not need whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems crazy. So are you pretty much saying that getting mammos done is just completely ineffective?
That's what the data suggests.
Okay.
I mean, hey, if you were that 1 in 1,000, it's definitely not. But for the other 999, yeah, I don't want to be exposed to radiation for no reason.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, you're really just looking for a needle in a haystack at that point.
Okay.
So here's an example from the cancer code. There's two women, both die from breast cancer at the age of 70. The first was screened and diagnosed at the age of 61. So she survived with breast cancer for 9 years. She underwent treatment and everything. So that five-year survival rate that I just talked about, she exceeded that. So that's a good outcome. The other woman didn't really want screening and wasn't diagnosed until she was 65. So she lived with cancer for only 5 years. That five-year survival rate, she didn't make it. So she died within those 5 years. However, both women died at the age of 70 from the same disease. So see how the early screening made the survival time look better while providing no actual benefit?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's kind of them manipulating numbers, right?
Yeah, and there's really no way, like, you can kind of prove it either one way or the other. But it's like, oh, yeah, hey, she had cancer. She survived because of our treatment. It's like, well, did she really? Or is there something else going on there?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's easy to manipulate the data. I mean, if you're looking for something that bad, like, yeah, you're going to find it a lot earlier. Another example, this kind of goes back to the cyanide example that I gave earlier. Say in the next year, 100 people are going to die from cancer. Well, with early screening and treatment by surgery, radiation, and chemo, only 75 of that 100 will die from cancer. And the other 25 will die from either heart disease, liver failure, or kidney disease due to complications and side effects from the chemo and radiation. So the early screening prevented 25% of cancer deaths while doing absolutely nothing to prevent all-cause mortality because the other 25 still died from either heart disease, liver failure, or kidney disease. That's a way that the treatment looks like you're getting a better outcome while providing no real benefit whatsoever.
Well, I mean, we know this just because, like you said, cancer is caused by chronic sublethal damage, but it's fairly similar with heart disease, liver failure, and kidney disease as well. Like, your body can only take so much, and radiation and chemo is very toxic.
And it's not site-specific either. Like, you're not, when you're doing radiation or you're doing chemotherapy, like, unfortunately, you can't just target cancer cells. You're pretty much just, like, napalming the whole area and hoping that enough healthy cells can repopulate it. But you're killing everything.
Yeah.
The cancer treatments that we have aren't the best bet. So, yeah, like, that's another way you can easily manipulate the data. Early screening for breast cancer doubled the amounts of early stage cancer found. However, this early detection only resulted in a tiny 8% reduction in late stage cancers. So we're finding all this cancer, and we're giving all these women treatment, but the end result is only an 8% reduction in late-stage cancers. That seems like it's you're doing a lot of harm for a very, very little benefit.
Yeah, but you know, all those treatments, you know what they do? They cost a ton of money.
True.
Yeah.
Keeping people employed, giving lots of costs to the,
oh, yeah,
to the hospital.
There's no money in healthcare, companies. But there's plenty of money in sick care.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love that quote. That's a good quote.
Uh-huh.
So only 6% of those early stage breast cancers were expected to progress into late stage cancer. That means like 94% of women were diagnosed with early stage breast cancer were exposed to chronic sublethal damage, aka radiation or chemo, for no benefit. Not to mention all the stress that goes along with it, not only to you, but your loved ones, because hey, cancer is a very stressful thing. I've had my mom and dad both go through it. Your dad's gone through it. Like, we know how stressful that is for not only the patient, but for everybody else in their life as well. And like you just mentioned, all the expensive costs that go along. Like, yeah, it's, if you're exposing 94% of women to a bunch of cost, stress, and just side effects for no reason, like, it seems like the negatives definitely outweigh the positives. So pretty much in conclusion on this one, early screening benefits less than 0.1%, but the risk of overdiagnosis is over 31%. So it definitely does more harm than good.
Yeah, I mean, the thing though, and we talked about this a little bit last week with insulin and cancer and how Jason Fung would paint cancer to be more intelligent than Thomas Seyfried per se. Not that they disagree on everything, but just from that point alone, I think a lot of people, the vast majority of people, are scared of cancer. And when they hear any sort of, they might have a tumor, they might have a growth, even if it's not cancerous, they freak out, they want treatment, they want surgery. And that is just, I mean, one, that's sad, right? Because I don't think that's the way it should be. But also, I think those people in those situations where they are desperate and they're talking about their mom or their wife or their husband, they'll probably say 0.1% is better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it. Because, like, hey, if you are that 0.1%, that means all the difference in the world.
But the odds aren't in your favor.
Yeah, but hey, you're much more likely to be in that 31%.
Exactly. It's like going pro in sports. Like, sorry, I mean, you might be fast and jump high, but you're probably not going to make it to the NBA.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
All right, so I think we talked about breast cancer enough. Let's talk about prostate cancer. This is the number two cancer killer in men. So lung cancer is the number one killer. For women, it's breast. For men, it's prostate. And then the number three killer overall is colorectal cancer.
Didn't your dad have prostate cancer?
He had prostate cancer when we were in middle school. Yeah. And surgery and had it removed.
Got it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we can kind of talk about that a little bit more specifically a little bit later on to see if that treatment may have caused something else.
Okay.
Just a little teaser for like the next 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So studies have found no real benefit for early screening for prostate cancer on all-cause mortality when looking at patients 10 to 15 years after the screening. The overdiagnosis was estimated to be 16% to 40%. I mean, that's a very huge range, but overdiagnosing like close to 40% of people seems to be very, very bad. Like, I can't believe that there's that many people going through that.
And obviously, like we just said, getting diagnosed with cancer is such a stressor. Like, that's upsetting.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I feel like we should kind of do a podcast just on how unethical some of that is. I know we've talked about it before, uh-huh. But it does seem very unethical.
Yeah, I agree.
So early stage cancers were detected, but did little to prevent late stage cancers. And that's the whole point of doing these early stage cancer detections, is to prevent the late stage. So if you're not preventing late stage cancer, then what's the point?
Mm-hmm.
And 12% of men diagnosed had one or more biopsies. And we're going to talk about more on the harms of biopsies later on. But yeah, 12% of men diagnosed had one or more biopsies. When you're talking about how many men are screened, how many men are diagnosed, like, this number is in the hundreds of thousands, millions of people.
Yeah, it's a lot, very, of biopsies. Yeah, and you know what's big, big money? Biopsies.
Oh, yeah, that's surgery, yep. That's removal. Yeah, that's what a biopsy is.
Yep, 100%.
All right, so the next cancer I want to talk about is thyroid cancer. So in 1999, South Korea started their own large-scale cancer screening. And they were screening for pretty much every main type of cancer out there. And one of the things that they found is in 2011, thyroid cancer was detected 15 times more than it was in 1993. So, damn, that's a giant number. I'm willing to bet that not that many more people had thyroid cancer. It's just that they were finding it all the time because they were looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And almost all diagnosed cases, the thyroid was either partially removed or fully removed. the rates of death from thyroid cancer were mostly unchanged.
How does that even make sense?
I don't know. I don't know if that process is, or if that program is still going on in South Korea, but it's like, okay, so we found this cancer, we've removed it, and there has been no benefit.
Everything you've said in the last like 20 minutes basically outlines the route we're taking for a cancer treatment is completely wrong. Isn't it? Isn't that, that should be the conclusion, right?
I mean, that's what I'm getting. It's like, oh, hey, we're doing all this stuff. We're spending lots and lots of money. We're doing treatments that aren't like perfectly safe because they do have a lot of side effects, and the reward is minimal.
At best. Yeah. Yeah. And even the people, I mean, who do see a benefit, it's not like they come out completely free. They're, like you said, there's going to be side effects, and there's going to be like a monetary bill that comes in a month, and you better have good insurance.
Yeah, it's not like these people are getting that Captain America, like, super soldier serum yeah. coming out of this treatment, like, bigger, faster, stronger.
It's the opposite.
Like, no, it's the polar opposite.
They're coming out smaller, weaker, and broke, so
yeah.
Is it even worth it? I know. And yeah, like Tom mentioned earlier, we're going to touch on the harms of biopsies and surgeries. And I specifically wanted to break this out to its own podcast because I believe it deserves it. Because like I mentioned earlier, biopsies are big money. And like I said, there's no money in healthcare, but there's money in sick care. And honestly, to me, biopsies in the cancer world is like giving insulin to diabetics in that world. Like, it works temporarily, but it's honestly the root cause is not, it's just not the right treatment. It's really not. And the quote I pulled was from Thomas Seyfried. He has this paper titled Considerations of Ketogenic Metabolic Therapy as a Complementary or Alternative Approach for Managing Breast Cancer. This quote is a very wordy, but I'm just going to read it all. And then we're going to have a whole entire podcast separately, specifically on biopsies, because like I said, I think it deserves that. But here's the quote. So, quote, data from several studies show that biopsies and surgery can cause inflammatory oncotaxis, thus increasing tissue angiogenesis and spread of tumor cells. Invasive and metastatic behavior would be expected of breast cancer cells with myeloid properties. Some have hypothesized that growth factor stimulation in response to intraoperative tissue damage can increase HER2 receptor activation in incompletely resected pre-invasive breast cancer, thus increasing risk for tumor cell proliferation and spread. End quote. So to put that in like layman's terms, biopsies and surgeries lead to metastasis. And that is what Tom said. Early cancer, not that big of a deal. We can treat that. Late cancer where things are metastasized, that's a problem. That's the killer. And the treatment we have for early cancer is biopsies. So if early cancer treatment is causing late cancer deaths, someone has to see a problem there, right?
Yeah, I mean, if the treatment for early stage cancer and the reason you're doing the early stage detection is actually causing the late stage cancer, then, like, what are you doing? What's the point of all of this treatment?
Exactly. This, that's what you're going to talk about with your dad, right?
Yeah, so exactly. So we talked about earlier how my dad had prostate cancer. Well, what did he do to get rid of the prostate cancer? He had surgery to get his prostate removed. Okay, so what happened? I think it's like 15 years later. I don't even think it was that long, probably like 10 to 15 years later. He's now diagnosed with another type of cancer. So could that have been cause and effect right there? We just talked about how these operations increase the risk of these cancers spreading. So maybe.
Yeah, well, specifically, I don't even want to talk about the surgery removing the prostate. 99% he was biopsied prior to the surgery, right? You probably don't know.
Yeah, that's how you detect it.
Exactly. So I think that's really the trigger there, is that initial biopsy. Because I think if, say you have breast cancer, let's say it's end stage, you're going to die, whatever, you just cut out all the tissue instead of poisoning yourself with actual, like, chemotherapy, your odds of survival are actually pretty decent. But it's that biopsy, that initial thing, and then obviously the, I guess, standard of care with cancer these days with chemo and radiation, that's where they get you. That's where they make you broke, that's where they make you sick, and that's why they make you a return customer.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. It's like the very thing that they're trying to prevent, they're most likely causing.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, there's a cynical side of me who thinks that the head honchos, whoever run this, know this, and just keep it going because it makes money. But I really don't
want to think that the doctors and surgeons know what they're doing. Like, I really think they're doing, they think they're doing, like, whatever, something decent, when really they're not. Right? Is that, like, you want to look at the people in a good light, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it the same way. It's that I think people are actually trying too hard, and sometimes, I mean, it's harder to do this. It's like, hey, sometimes the best course of action is to actually do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, people don't like hearing that. Like, oh, what do you mean? Like, I have to try something. I have to do something. It's like, well, actually, maybe doing nothing is the best course of action. I forgot what president he got shot while he was in office. It wasn't Lincoln. I think it was before Lincoln. He gets shot while he's in office. And, of course, he has all the best doctors in the world or in America, like, trying to operate on him. So they keep trying to get to the bullet. And there's, like, one younger doctor in there, and he's like, hey, maybe we should just leave the bullet in there and just try and stop the bleeding as best as we can, because it looks like we're just causing all this infection. And this is right around the time where we're starting to learn about bacteria and learning how, like, infections actually happen. So most likely, God, I can't remember the president's name, he died most likely from the doctors, like, causing all these bacterial infections, poking around, trying to pull the bullet out, and not actually losing blood. So if they would have just, like, stitched him shut, handled the bleeding, he would have been fine. But they just focused too much, trying way too hard to get that bullet out, leading to infection and him just wasting away, just dying a very long and slow, painful death.
Yeah, no, that's a great example. That is. I mean, I don't know the president's name. I don't know any president's name, really, but I bet he wasn't old white guy. Can we agree on that?
Well, it wasn't Obama, so yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Just to kind of sum up this podcast, like, these are the side effects of overdiagnosing. There's a bunch of expensive, unnecessary healthcare costs. You're adding a bunch of increased stress for the patient and the loved ones. And there's so many negative health impacts of stress as well. I don't know if we've done a podcast on that. I'm sure we have. We've done 130 of these.
Mm-hmm.
Radiation and chemotherapy, also known as chronic sublethal damage, can lead to cancer transformation and progression. And here's the big one. Biopsies and surgery can lead to metastasis, the very thing that you're trying to prevent by these early stage diagnosis. So unfortunately, early stage cancer screenings cause more harm than they do good.
And I think that's a shocking conclusion, because most people would not think that, especially with the narrative out there that we're kind of like turning the tide with cancer, that these screenings work, and they just don't, you know, and the numbers back it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I wanted to believe, but, like, actually looking at all the data, I mean, it does make sense.
It does make sense, yeah. Well, all right. Well, that's another podcast in the books. A little depressing, but, you know, hey, it is what it is. But you can find more information about this on TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com or on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Oh, and that president was James Garfield. That's the president.
There you go. The president no one knows. Yeah, nobody knows Garfield. Come on now.
That's why I forgot it. Sorry for any Garfield fans out there. My bad.
What year was that? Did you find that?
1901. I thought it was, 1881, sorry.
Oh, God. No one cares about 1881. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. I thought it was earlier than that, because I thought we knew about infections and stuff by then. But I guess, you know, it takes a long time for medicine to catch up with it.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Yeah.
So, yeah, please rate, review, and subscribe on your favorite podcast provider. That's Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. Hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.